It's Tom from the Talking Chip Podcast, and I got a very special guest here with me today. It is the aspiring mayoral candidate for the city of Baltimore in 2024 election year, Mr. Bob Wallace himself. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Tom. Just glad to be alive and glad to be among the living and being able to pursue my dreams. So it's a good thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very extensive background, man, that I've read here. Bob is not only running for mayor, but he has a consulting tech company, Bit Group. He's also an author. He got a recent book that he just released. You guys can go check it out. Do you want to tell us about that book, Let God Be God?
Absolutely. Yeah, Tony, I'm excited about that book. I've written 8 books, Tone, and 6 have been published. 2 are, I'm kind of waiting for the right time to publish them. But this one is Let God Be God, Using God's Power to Change Your Life and to Change the World. And this is really a culmination, Tone, of my research into successful entrepreneurship and its intersection with spirituality. I have found from my over 40 years of research starting at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth College back in the 1980s, that there is a very strong correlation between successful entrepreneurship and spirituality. And when I talk about spirituality, so I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about a belief and internalization that there's a power in the universe that's greater than us and greater than yourself, and that power, if properly understood and utilized, can make a difference in not only your life, but in the life of humanity. And so I wanted to put together a book of my findings on that topic. And so I used that title, Let God Be God, that if we let God be God, if we let God be who he is in our lives, that it could change our lives and change the destiny of the destiny of humanity.
Absolutely. The Most High, most definitely, is an amazing presence, for anybody who's alive at the end of the day, who's been alive. I mean, because I say it like this, but in a joking fashion, being here is like winning the lottery at the end of the day. Some people don't realize that. And they take it for granted time that they have on earth. Oftentimes, and I'm just looking at your book title here. I'm looking at the information on the offering of the book. It says that this latest installment is, where you're studying religion, world literature, philosophy, and science. Can you give us a little deep dive in regards to the philosophical aspect and the research? How long did it take for you to actually put this book together?
So that particular book, Tone, was one that really I had been writing in my heart and in my spirit for over 25 years. Even when I wrote my first book, Black Wealth Through Black Entrepreneurship, and I talked about the principles, the 20 success traits, if you will, of successful minority and women entrepreneurs. Well, Tone, the number one trait was spiritual fortitude. Of the 20 traits that I talk about in the book, spiritual fortitude was number one. So this seed has been planted in my spirit, in my mind, for many, many years. Well, I had the opportunity to put it together. Sometimes, God takes you through a journey, to get you to where you need to get to. So I had to go through a journey over 25 plus years before I was ready to put, pen to paper and put this in place. And I guess, Tone, if I were to summarize it for people, it would be this book is about power, right? Power. And what is power? Power is simply the ability to achieve your purpose in the face of adversity, right? The ability to achieve your purpose in the face of adversity. And so given that definition of power, who in their right mind does not want power? And so I find that most people do want their share of power. And what I'm suggesting is if you want to get unlimited power, that is universal, unlimited, all powerful, that that power comes through God. Okay, now I know people will view God differently, you know, so this is not about, you know, Christianity or Islam or Judaism or Buddhism or Taoism, any of those things, but it's about what you believe. Now, I will say this though, Tony. I will say my version, if you will, of talking about this dynamic of power through the God of the universe is spoken and written through the eyes of a Christian, because I am a Christian. And so I do it and I write it through the eyes of a Christian. But the point I make to my readers is, yeah, the way I approached it was through the eyes of a Christian, but you can take the same principles and apply them through the eyes of a Muslim or a Jew or a Buddhist. I think the principles are across the board and apply to everyone.
Absolutely. Everybody has their own expression and belief system. And I respect your faith. As you say, you walk in Christ-like mannerism. In your city, Baltimore, that is.
Yes, sir.
Hey, there's a church for every liquor store.
Yes.
What do you think? Why do you think that the youth, or, you know, in the urban community in general, why do you think we struggle to follow the path, the foundational path of the Bible, of the Ten Commandments, to find the power and potential within ourselves?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. And I think it's not just an issue in the urban centers. I think it's an issue in our nation, I think in the world. And that is that our young people, they have, for whatever reason, have lost the ability to dream. The ability to dream. I mean, look, when I was a kid in the projects in South Baltimore, Tom, I mean, we were poor. I mean, we had rats and roaches. We had no heat in the winter. Sometimes we had no running water. We had food scarcity was an issue for us. I mean, my mother was a recovering alcoholic. I mean, look, Tony, I've been through this stuff. I know about poverty. I know about the trauma of being black and poor in America. But one of the things that our parents, despite the shortages that we had of resources, they taught us three things, and this is what I taught my five kids and my 10 grandkids. Number one, you got to have faith in God. Why is that important? Because you got to believe, Tone, that your future is going to be better than your present. You got to believe that if you do certain things, and if you refuse to give up, that the God of the universe will conspire to allow you, you know, Tone or Bob or whoever it is listening to this, to be what you were designed to be, what you were created to be. So that becomes very important. The second thing Mom and Dad taught us that I think young folks sometimes have lost their way is the power of education. See, I would submit to you that if our young people were in a system, a school education system, that allowed them to enter in the kindergarten, go all the way through 12th grade, and train them and educate them and lift them up into an economy that would provide them jobs and economic opportunity, I would submit to you that the social dysfunction that we see in our cities, in our society, you know, the poverty, the violence, the addiction, the hopelessness, the helplessness, all those things would go away if we could figure out this education system. And that's why, as mayor, part of my platform, Tone, is to lean heavily into the education system, because I know if that system can produce and educate our babies so that they can be competitive in the economy, that will fix our social problems. And so there's a strong connection there. And then the third piece that I think that's missing is hard work. I mean, look, Tone, you can have all the opportunity you want, but if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and work hard, right, it's not going to happen. And so I think in this age, too many of our young people, you know, watching the movies and TV and internet, they think that, you know, their success comes, you know, overnight. It comes without blood, sweat, and tears. Well, that's not true. It's not the case. You got to struggle a little bit. And so I think those are some of the things I see missing in our young people. And it's not just Baltimore, it's not just the urban centers. In the rural areas of America, too, I see the same dynamic. On a global level, you know, I see it on the same level. And so this is a global issue But of course, it's in the cities, particularly Baltimore in my case, you know, it's visible, very, very visible to us on a daily basis.
Understood. And I know you said education is going to be, you know, one of the platforms that you're focused on. Well,
yes,
I would like to share this with you. You know, I hope that we focus on macro and microeconomics as you're saying, understanding the educational system, because, you know, some of the guys that I've listened to recently, like Sowell and I can't remember his name. I want to say Walter Williams, which is
sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Walter Williams. Those guys, fascinating listening to. Just I'm listening to the YouTube that they have available at this point. They're offering, because Walter passed during the pandemic, and Thomas Sowell, he's not really that visible, even though he's still with us. But he has a lot of respected publications out there, and
he does.
I want to say, like, as far as people that have the opportunity to listen to the podcast, please share it. Listen to some of these names and the principles that we're talking about, because I'm gonna circle back. You said faith in God, power of education, and hard work. Coming from the south side of Baltimore, Cherry Hill, right? To be exact.
Yes, sir.
All right. What was your educational upbringing? Like, what schools did you attend, and who pushed you to open your eyes, who challenged you to challenge yourself even more, understanding that there was a little bit of dysfunction within the household?
Absolutely. It started with mom and daddy, okay? Because mom and daddy, even though, you know, we had some dysfunction in our family, like I mentioned, my mother was a recovering alcoholic, but I would tell you later on in life, mama, the Lord bless mama, she put the bottle down, went back to college, got her degree, her undergrad degree, she got her master's degree, and was working on her PhD before she passed. So mama overcame and daddy overcame, right? But they were the ones that really imparted that desire for knowledge and for education. And then this granddaddy and grandmama, you know, they didn't have education because they wouldn't allow black folks back then to get education. They wouldn't allow them to get certain jobs. They wouldn't allow them to live in certain neighborhoods because of redlining, right? But despite that, they instilled in their grandchildren and then their children this desire for knowledge and learning. And so in my case, my father was very, very dominant about education, to the point, Tom, that he made me go to a certain high school in Baltimore City called Baltimore Polytechnic Institute. Now, that may not mean anything to you, but Poly back in the day was a school for kids who were gifted in math and science. So you had to take an exam to get in. You had to, you know, wear a jacket and tie. And this is a public school. This is not a private school. It's public school. And so I went to the school, Tone, and it changed my life. It changed my life. At that time when I went, it was just integration just started pretty much. And I've known a few black kids there. And it was the first time I'd gone to school with white kids in my life up until that point. Just elementary and middle school was all black kids in my neighborhood. And then when we went to high school, it's when integration, I was integrating with white kids. And so I was with white kids in the classroom. I had white professors in the program. And if daddy and mama hadn't prepared me, I would have missed the opportunity of going to a school like that. Because there were two professors in high school. I never will forget them. Mr. Knighting and Mr. Sanford, and they pulled me up one day in my junior year of high school, and they said, "We think that you are gifted and that you can be competitive at an Ivy League college." Now, and can I tell you, at the time, I had no idea what Ivy League college was, but these two men I had grown to trust. And these were two white guys. One was a Polish-American and one was a Jewish-American. But they, for whatever reason, they saw something in me. And they took the time to nurture me and to nurture my that seed of learning, that seed of research and improving my knowledge base. And those men helped me to apply to Ivy League schools. And so when I applied to college, I'm telling you, that was pretty much my vision. I want to get to an Ivy League school. And by God's grace, I did. And so I think the seed, there have been people all along the journey of my life, Tom, who had planted seeds and pointed me in the right direction to where I needed to go. And I think that young people today, that's what they need. They need mentors, men and women like you and I, to guide them and point the way, right? And in some cases, curry them. Like when they start wanting to give up or change direction, you have to curry them until they get their senses back, right? And then you can get right back on the track.
Well, and that's interesting you say that. I'm familiar with Poly, Baltimore City College, Baltimore College City High School, City High School. Also Dunbar. I'm pretty well read. One of my heroes, because he's passed on, but Reginald F. Lewis, down there with the Reginald F. Lewis Center. Similar story, you know, like yourself, and you know, the way that you're explaining, and it's pretty amazing, right? As far as the overcomers, yourself, like Reginald, who have a competitive academia aspiration or academic aspiration,
right?
So many of our people are centered and driven by sports,
right,
and entertainment.
Right.
But there are so many of us that, you know, yearn for knowledge. And like you said, you know, once that seed was put into you, that you could attend the Ivy League school.
Right.
But what school did you wind up attending?
So I went to University of Pennsylvania undergrad, where I studied, I got my degree in mechanical engineering and applied mechanics. And then I worked for, I went the corporate route, worked for DuPont, IBM, Procter & Gamble, Westinghouse. And then I went to graduate school for my MBA at Dartmouth, at the Amos Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. So there were two Ivy League schools that I went to. And, you know, once that seed was planted, though, Tone, and I said, you know, I'm a child of God. Therefore, I deserve the best. I deserve the best that this world can offer. And so because that seed in my thinking, I said, I deserve to be at the table with the best. You know, I deserve to be at these places that too many of us have been prevented from participating in. I deserve it. And so that's a mindset, Tony. That's a mindset that our young people need to establish, that you are a child of God. You are a child of the God of the universe. Therefore, there's nothing on this planet that's better than you, that you don't deserve. But you got to fight for it. You got to, because they're not going to let you in on their own. You got to knock down the door. And you got to say, I'm here. You will recognize me. You will see me. Right? And I'm not going anywhere. And I think that's the mindset I think our young people need to have. And it's the one that I instilled in my five kids. All five of my kids, Tone, are successful. You know, and I give the credit to God and then to my wife. I met my wife at University of Pennsylvania. She was studying biomedical engineering. I mean, she's brilliant. She's a brilliant woman. She's beautiful. She's smart. I mean, you know, my kids are blessed. They get their mother, they inherited their mother's good looks and her intelligence. Right? They got my passion tone, but they got her good looks and intelligence. But we just really have instilled in our kids that same spirit that, look, I deserve the best. So I've got a, you know, kid who went to Stanford Business School, Georgia Tech, Dartmouth, University of Delaware, University of Virginia, Amherst. I mean, my kids are just really taking off because we planted that seed. And my vision as mayor is to use that same game plan for the young people of Baltimore City, right? The same strategy they worked for Bob Wallace can work for these kids if they listen and they are obedient and they follow the path. The path will take them to success.
Now, I like that. I like that. A wonderful story, you know, obviously of your success, and you know, hearing how you said your mother went back and recovered, and was pursuing her doctorate before she passed.
Yes,
you've excelled. Your wife's excelled. Your children excelled. One line or simple question. Do you feel that because you guys are third generation at this point, it's easier with your lineage as your family grows to where they understand that that's an expectation being born into a family that has these academic success?
Oh, man, Tony, you put your finger on something that's critical. Pardon me. And the answer is yes. Look, here's the reality. It's that every generation, Tony, stands on the shoulders of the previous generation, okay? So in my generation, we rose to a certain level that made our family competitive, so that when our children were about to launch, they were launching from a much higher platform than when me and my wife launched. And that is the beauty of the building blocks of family and community and society. But the converse is also true, unfortunately, Tom. So if a man does not achieve what he's capable of, let's say he gets caught up in the criminal justice system. Let's say he gets caught up in addiction, and whatever those things are, those evils of society, he or she gets caught up in those things. They prevent him or her from building a platform for their children to be successful. And what's happening, unfortunately, too much in the African American community, Tone, is that our generation is not achieving as it should and as it could. But that means that their children now are starting at a disadvantage. They're starting behind their competitors, and it's hard to catch up, Tone. It's hard to catch up. It's not impossible, but it's hard. So I do think you're right, sir. I do think that the seed of the parents makes a difference in the growth of their children.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm listening to you. I'm motivated by, you know, as excited as you are, you know, speaking about your accomplishments, your achievements, and also, you know, hearing you share what you share. Now, I don't really want to jump politics just yet. but I don't really want to hold you, because I know I said we were going to do a quick one and get in and get out of here. Yeah. But I mean, we opening up so many doors, and I'm circling back to, you know, running on a platform of focusing on a better education. St. Francis Academy, and I'm not calling anybody out, but like schools like St. Francis Academy, you know, and other preparatory schools, academies, Catholic-based schools, they're very apt to go after the black athlete, right, and draw them into the institution to come and play and dominate in the sport and bring city championships to them. But I don't think that they're going for the academic, the scholastic students the way that they're going for plucking, you know, that talented 10th out of our public school systems. So do you find, as far as like correcting or trying to better Baltimore City Schools as an initiative, will you be meeting with the CEO of Baltimore City? You know, granted, if you win the mayorship, and put some type of initiatives in to try to drive home something where we can spearhead something to focus on education as much as we focus on basketball and football?
Well, yes. So Tone, let me say this. I would disagree with you a little bit, in that these academies, the one you spoke of, and the other ones that I know, my experience, Tone, has been that they do like the athletes, but they focus on the academics. So these kids that I have seen, and I've been a part of some of these schools over the years, Tone. I mean, yeah, the kids come in, maybe good athlete, like I was in high school, but they really focus on the academics. So what happens is you get kids like me. So when I graduated, I was a good athlete, Tone, but I was also a great student, right? And I think that you can do both. And I do think there's a place for sports and athletics and the development of a man and woman, right? I think there's a place for sports, especially team sports. So what I'm going to do as mayor is I'm going to lean in real heavy on the education system. Let me be very clear. When I'm mayor, I'm going to replace the current CEO of school system, Dr. Santelices. She's a lovely woman. She's a smart woman. But I think she's had enough time to figure something out on our and our system that's not working. And I think that when the team is not performing, and you give the team time for correction, and it doesn't happen, then it's probably time to get a new coach, right?
So
I think we need a new coach, Tone. I think we need a new board, or from different kind of backgrounds of boards. And we need to be demand-driven as to how we educate our kids. And what I mean by that, Tone, is this. We need to go to the universities, to go to the industries, go to the plumbing associations, the carpentry associations, the electrical associations, and ask them, what are the skills that you anticipate the people who work in your industries are going to need? And then let me plan the education system that will map to what the emerging needs are of the economy. The problem I see in Baltimore, and maybe other places too, Tone, we are teaching kids skills that are 20 years old, that for industries that are dying, right? You know, and so we need to fix that. So when I say demand-driven education, it means education systems that are designed to create skill sets and jobs for the future, for what these kids are going to emerge into, right? The economy they're going to emerge into. And I think those are things I would do as an engineer, as a businessman, as an entrepreneur. I understand business tone. I understand technology. I understand the economy. And I think that's the kind of mayor we need in Baltimore City to turn this around.
Understood. Now, saying that, crime in Baltimore City.
Yes, sir.
It impacts potential workforce opportunities.
Big time, yes, sir.
As far as some of these major companies that are potentially willing to come into your area, I remember at one point Amazon was lobbying to take the one of the downtown venues on the west side of Baltimore. It didn't pan out. I know they have their warehouses over on the east side, not too far from the Baltimore port. But that's one company.
Right.
Downtown is impacted right now. Obviously, we're coming off the pandemic. Most the rent for small businesses to thrive is through the roof at this point. So we're seeing a lot of shops leave the inner harbor of Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
I know we can't roll out everything that you know as far as your aspirations and your platform to run on, but can we? And I want to say it looks like crime is somewhat under control, but can we get better so that we can bring in some of the right corporations?
Well, you know, first of all, Tone, I don't think the crime is under control. Because I believe that as long as you have the kind of poverty that we have in this city, that you're going to have this crime. Now it may go down a little bit, Tone. It may go up. But the fact that we have close to 300 homicides every year for the last 5 years at least, that's unacceptable. So even if it drops, Tone, to 280 or 270, that's still not where we need to be, right? So yeah, you can play with the numbers and you say, yeah, it's getting better. And I think we should recognize that to give us some hope, but don't think that we are that we have arrived and that we're there. One of the things I learned, Tony, this is one of the benefits of being raised in poverty and being raised in the projects, is I've seen violence up close. I don't need anybody to lecture me about it. I don't need to read a book about it. I've lived it. I understand it. And what I have found is there are three levels of violence, three seeds of violence, right? And I call them, one is crimes of conflict, right? When you have, like what you had over in Brooklyn, right? When you had these gangs, you know, it's just guys getting to a beef. And they solve the beef, you know, with violence. That's one source of violence. The other source of violence that I've seen in my life, in my upbringing, is crimes of addiction. All right, I had buddies, man, who got hooked on heroin and other things, and they were addicted, man. They needed to get money to get the next fix. So that was driving a lot of the crime that we saw in my neighborhood in Cherry Hill. And then there's crime of necessity. There are just some people. Tone, who fell out of the education system, who don't have skills, don't have a degree, looking around at other people who are living well, and they're saying, man, I want to live like that, but I have no skill, I have no education, I have no job, so what are they going to do, Tone? What are they going to do? They're going to take a gun and they're going to rob somebody. And I can tell you, well, in my business, I moved my business from Columbia, Maryland, almost 20 years ago to downtown Baltimore. And I can tell you, we've lived this, right? I've had employees carjacked in broad daylight. I've had our cars broken into, our building broken into, the homeless people living on our porch and in our backyard. I mean, these are the trials and tribulations of working and running a business in the city of Baltimore. Now, I ask you, Tom, what business can sustain that? What business will want to sustain that? And I think that until we change this environment that anything goes and people can do whatever they want to do at any time they want to do it, we're going to have businesses that are not going to come here. And I think you mentioned the Amazon thing, although they didn't say it in their write-up. I guarantee you, Tom, that the violence or the reputation of violence and dysfunction in this city played a role. And us not getting that business. So what we need to do as a city, what I would do as mayor, I'm going to divide the city into villages, right? Based upon similar characteristics in terms of income, in terms of housing structure, in terms of school quality, school of choice. I'm going to divide it up, and we're going to put together strategies that are based on the village level. See, what we have now, we have strategies that are based upon the city as a whole, right? And that's not going to work. But we got to divide the city up into villages, and then we're going to have specific strategies for those villages around crime and policing, around housing, around education, around trash and pickup. Because what I've found is that different communities have a different threshold of what they will accept or what will work for them. So a strategy in South Baltimore, let's say in crime fighting in Cherry Hill or Brooklyn, will not be the same strategy that I would use in Roland Park, right? It's going to be different. And therefore, we need to segmentize, if you will, if there's such a word, segmentize our strategy so that it matches the specific needs of the villages that I'm going to create in the city to help address these issues.
Definitely. I mean, the city makeup, for people that don't understand Baltimore City, I speak to it because I've lived there at some point. And I understand, I'm a native Floridian, but moving to the city and seeing and hearing people saying, I don't go to the east side because I live on the I don't go to the west side.
That's right.
I live on the west side. Are you guys living in Berlin, Germany? I'm not understanding it. I'm not understanding why there's such a stigma, but you don't want to judge a city based off a television show. Everybody references The Wire. Right. Everybody references The Corner for those HBO shows that were taped in the city. But I don't want to live off of that because no matter where I go, I feel safe in Baltimore. I don't care what the violence is. Mm-hmm. I haven't been accosted. I haven't been put into any difficult situation because I know how to maneuver in the streets. Mm-hmm. But not everyone understands that. The education is critical, as you said, because, it's disheartening seeing young men still on the corner asking for change, watching the windows in 2023, understanding that there are so many short-term gigging opportunities through tech jobs that they can fulfill. And the thing that is amazing to me is that with the youth, more specifically, the black impoverished youth, as they love to focus on, the black males,
right?
These guys are highly intelligent. They
yes,
can
they
maneuver
are.
Technology like no other. And the reason why we know this is because we're the guinea pigs for most corporations to build their line of defense off of.
That's true. Very
what
true.
Are they doing that we have to put preventative measurements in place? And I'm going to go way out there to make sure we can stop the Nigerian scammers,
mm-hmm.
And just putting a microscope on certain situations to say, it's not that we don't know. It's the fact that I feel that we're paperwork out because we're not obtaining the credentials that they're putting in our face. We're not finishing primary school. We're not finishing and getting a general bachelor's degree, which jobs stay open at this point. Now hiring. And it's not because of the salary is inadequate. People don't have the credentials.
They don't have the credentials, Tone. Some of us have been down so long and battling depression and trauma so much that we've lost the will to learn. We've lost the will to work. We've lost the will to be a productive member of our society. Now, those are realities that we have to face. There are people who are at that point. And so we have to figure out how do we reclaim as many of those people as we can? But more importantly, Tom, more importantly, that we make sure, we assure that the pipeline that exists today will produce the results that we need to see. Because some people, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to save. That's just a fact of life.
True.
But we save as many as we can, Tom, and we do the best job we can, but we got to make daggone sure that the pipeline that of education, it's not a pipeline of education to prisons, but education to jobs. And that's where there's a gap there, and we need to fix that gap. So we have a system that produces education to jobs and not education to prison.
Well, I'm not going to hold you. I got a couple more questions for you here. I'm going to just throw something in the air, man. We need to have an affiliate partnership program with these nonprofit organizations.
Uh-huh.
I.e. the churches. The churches need to have a partnership with an education system. Like, if you were going to open up a church, I personally feel that the church needs to be tied into, if they're in a community, you need to be tied into your local high school,
right,
your local middle school, in some capacity to offer one course,
mm-hmm.
at least something diverse that mm-hmm. aid people, as opposed to having them continuously come for the handouts.
Right.
If everything is a coat drive, if everything is a food drive, and it's a giveaway, that mentality is not going to change for the less educated civilians anywhere.
Totally agree, Tom. Totally agree. And unfortunately, that is the mindset that I think too many of our political leaders have, right? Where let me provide a handout to the voters or to the communities, you know, versus redesigning the system, restructuring, re-engineering this thing such that we get men and women, we're producing men and women that are productive, right, that are adding new ideas to the economy, that are helping to create jobs, where they are in a structured and in an environment where they are safe and they can be the best that God made them to be. That's what we need to be doing. But Tom, that takes a business mind to do that, not a political mind. And unfortunately, we keep putting in leaders who have this political mindset and think that there's a political solution to everything and every problem in our community. That's not the case. That isn't the case. So I think that's why I'm running for mayor, is to bring that new mindset, right? You know, Einstein said it best, Tone. He said, you cannot solve the problems with the same mindset that created the problem. You need a different mindset to fix it. So, and what we do, Tone, we vote in the same mindset that created the problem in the beginning. And we think somehow they're going to fix it. Well, they're not. Because as Einstein said, the problem, the mindset that created the problem, is not the mindset that's going to fix it. So you got to find a different mindset. And I think that mindset is a business technology mindset of leaders that understand the importance and the power of technology, of business and the economy, and how that can just change the lives of Black and brown people all over the world.
I respect that. And I hope that all voters enter the booths with an open mind in this season. I know some are marked down as lifers, for the Republican or Democratic Party, just from the ideology alone, or at this point, I think some people just voting for the color.
Some do. Yeah. Some people do, Tone. Some people do. I mean, many people don't look at the issues, don't look at the background of the candidate, don't look at what he or she can bring to the table to help make their lives better. And that's not just Baltimore, Tone. That's across the nation. I mean, I look at the people who support Trump, and I ask them, and I know many of them, and I ask them, what has he done for you? When he was in there for 4 years, what did he do to make your life better? And they can't answer because he didn't do anything. But yes, they will vote for him I have my theory on that, why they vote for him. But the people like him who play these games, these racial games, these social economic games, and get people hating each other, people who should be, in fact, collaborating with each other, quite frankly.
But absolutely.
Politicians do, huh?
We're seeing that now, and we can water it down to sports. Like Deion said, man, y'all not playing against my team. Y'all playing to beat me. Still,
right. Today,
the racial divide is there for some people where they're playing the mind games. But interesting quote that you have on your page here: power can be very corrupting, deceiving, and disruptive, even to people who aren't necessarily the worst among us. That is so true.
Absolutely.
And I ask you this: you ran in 2020. Now you're going to run in 2024.
Yes, sir.
What did you learn from being on the landscape, out with the people, from 2024? What is one of the things that you hope that you can correct in order to garner enough votes to actually win the seat?
That's a great question. That's a great question. Well, first of all, you might not know this, but when I ran in 2020, I ran as an independent, okay? I ran as a third-party independent. I didn't run as a Democrat or Republican because I feel that my ideas, who I am, how I think, I'm an independent-thinking man, right? And I ran as an independent. Well, I came in second place. I got about 20% of the vote. I was the first independent in the history of Baltimore to make it on the ballot as a mayoral candidate in Baltimore's history. So we made history. This time, though, Tone, I'm running as a Democrat. And I'm running as a Democrat because there are people in the last election who would have voted for me, but they couldn't hear me because I was not a Democrat. Now, as disappointed as I am in what I just said, it's a fact. And so I'm saying, okay, folks, this time, hear me. If it means I got to run as a Democrat, hear me. My ideas are the same ideas I had in 2020, Tone. Bob Wallace is the same Bob Wallace in 24 as he was in 2020. My solutions to make the city a better place, to improve the quality of life, they haven't changed. So my focus is on economy, education, and crime. And those three are the three legs of the stool. Right, we get those three, and they're all connected. They're all interrelated, interdependent. Right, so we're gonna focus on those things. I'm gonna lean in on all three of those areas. Right, as mayor, I'm not gonna just leave it to my staff. I'm going to be involved in those things because I think that's the kind of bully pulpit you have to have and use to have meaningful change. And I'm prepared to put myself on the line to make that happen. And the last thing I say, Tony, to your question about what I learned. I learned that the solutions to our problems in the city and in society in general are in the hearts and the minds of the people in the communities. And if we just built a pathway, a conduit for them to share their ideas on how to solve problems, we could solve our problems overnight. I'm convinced.
Understood. Beautiful 3-point platform, unofficially. Economy, education, and crime.
Yes,
they
sir.
All coincide because every county comes in and takes a little bit of Baltimore and retreats back to their home.
Amen, so Tone. Amen. That's real.
They come and contribute when they're watching football with the Ravens and the Orioles.
Right.
And, it takes education and savvy to get there. And, of course, they're trying to elude the crime as they hang out and enjoy the nightlife. So it all ties in. It makes perfect sense, man. Listen, I'm not going to hold you. I appreciate your time. We're going to wrap again, definitely. I want to see where you are as you're getting ready for your primaries. But one thing I want to close out with here, just talk about this briefly. If you can give us 2 points about this group, your business, who you are as a corporation, and then also talk about the impending conference that's coming up October 22nd through the 25th. Let's Close the Equity Gap, which is going to be the NMSD conference that's being held in the city.
That's correct. So the NMSDC conference is a national organization. This will be the first time we've held our national conference in Baltimore City. So this is a big deal, Tom. This is a big deal. We're going to have between 6,000 and 10,000 people coming in from all over the world into Baltimore. I will be speaking at this event, Tony. I'll be speaking on my book on strategic partnerships and alliances. Hopefully people who hear this may make their way down there to hear me present that. We will be using this conference as a megaphone, as a reset, if you will, for Baltimore City, right? And we want to show the world where Baltimore is not just a wire, right? It's not just what you hear in the news. Baltimore is a great city that has its challenges, but boy, we got a lot of good things going on here too. And we want to highlight that for these thousands of people that are coming from all over the world, right, to be a part of that. So I'm on the board of NMSDC. I'll be speaking. My business is one of the sponsors of this event. I have two companies. Biscom Technologies is an IT services company that focuses on health technology solutions, education technology solutions, and energy technology solutions. And then we have the energy company, and Biscom Technologies is about over 30 years old. Biff Energy is our energy company that does work in building solar and wind energy systems. We do a microgrid battery engineering type work, anything that is going to be useful in reducing the carbon in our world. So we have a carbon reduction solutions, you know, in solar energy, wind energy, batteries, EV charging systems, all those things we design and build so that we can reduce the carbon in our universe or in our world. And then, of course, the books I've written, I do a lot of coaching and a lot of mentoring of entrepreneurs all over the world, Tom, all over the world. So this is a global event, man. This is a global event. And the issues you and I are talking about, they're not just happening in Baltimore, Tom. They are worldwide. They are worldwide. In 2018, in preparation for my book on global, on this call, I'm calling it Global Entrepreneurship, I got on the ship, my wife and I, and we sailed around the world for 6 months. We took a sabbatical. And we visited, you know, over 40 countries, 100 ports of call all over the world. And I tell you something, the issues we're talking about here are global issues. They're global issues. And so we in Baltimore need to keep that in mind. It's not just us. It is a global issue. And that's how we learn. We can learn from each other if we understand that this is a global mission that we're on, but that will impact Baltimore City.
Understood. The lithium thing definitely is a challenge. I was in Tampa recently, had an EV car. Man, to find a port that would charge that car up fast enough.
Right.
the energy it takes from that, and I know you guys are focused on clean energy. That's Biden's bill right now. He wants a certain percentage of vehicles or to be EV. It's a beautiful go-kart. I mean, that's all I can equate it to. running off of gasoline for so long, or ethanol for so long, it's going to be hard for some people to really accept that change. They'll feel like they're losing power in the thrust, which they really aren't. But I'm pro EV for the clean energy. But I'm anti-EV, although I see Lexus has, and the algorithms have answered my question already, where they have the hybrids that still have the fuel option. Because if I'm driving long distance, from state to state, I don't have 3 hours to just pull off the road and recharge.
Right.
You understand? Me taking 15 minutes to refuel. So that's the catch 22 with the EV process. And then, you know, as you said, your sabbatical where you traveled about and you got a chance to see other things. It's great. I learned a lot from traveling myself. The catch 22 is having people bring it together who don't travel. Like I said, it's hard for people to go east side, west side. It's definitely hard for people from Baltimore to travel to PG and DC. Not because they do not have the ability, it's because some lack the desire, feeling that their city is the greatest show on earth. Everything's there for them, and they don't have that broad spectrum that would lessen some of the mental tension that they have sometimes, where they can see that it's not just them going through this, as you said. It's other people that are experiencing the same thing. But if you focus on news media, which is just dominated, and it's so negative charged.
Right.
When I see these kids down at the crossings in the morning sometimes, as they're heading over to the school that's closest to them, Digital Harbor. It's depressing. It's depressing to see a teenager feel with such anger at the top of their morning. And I'm like, man, what's going on in your life where I feel that I got to take a step back and watch you so you don't swing on me just because I'm trying to get a cup of coffee?
But Tom, that's the reality of being raised poor and black in America. Right. And there's a correlation between poverty and racism. There's a strong correlation. So you take these kids who were raised like I was raised, okay, in the beginning, where you have, you know, you don't have three meals a day. You may not have a place to sleep. Mom's working two or three jobs, or she has some addictions. You know, daddy's doing the best he can, or he's not there. I mean, imagine that, Tom, day in, day out, living like that. And so what happens is, unless there is a way for a child to redistribute that energy, that in that case negative energy, into positive energy, then that kid's going to be like the kids that you see. They're going to be loud. They're going to be violent. They're going to be easily, they're going to be on edge. And this is where we are in our city. Everyone's on edge. These kids are on edge, and they don't have any way. They don't see a way out of their pain and out of their uncertainty. In my case, mom and daddy were there. Mom and daddy gave us the three-step pathway. They held us accountable to follow that pathway, Tom. But imagine if you don't have parents who hold you accountable. What will happen? What will happen is that child will fall into the hands of the street. And you and I know what will happen when that happens, when he falls or she falls into the street. Only bad things happen there. Right. So therefore, we've got to figure out a way to help these kids release some of this negative energy of trauma and redirect it into positive things.
I hear that, man. Making a way out when there's no way out. Mr. Wallace, it's been great speaking with you. Can you please give the people your website where they can easily find you and all your works?
Yes, sir. So they can go, the campaign website is www.wallaceforbaltimore.com, wallaceforbaltimore.com. Our IT company is www.bisgroup.com, and that's spelled B as in boy, I as in India, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, group.com. www.bithgroup.com, and then there's www.bithenergy, B as in boy, I as in India, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, energy.com, and they can see what we're doing. And there may be people on this call who are looking for work that maybe you know, we have an opportunity for them. So you never know what can happen.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it, sir. Guys, don't forget, go out and get the book, Latest Offering from him as well. It's available on Amazon. You can find it there. Again, he has five other offerings for you. Again, the book title is Let God Be God. until next time, we speak again, Mr. Wallace. Thank you. And have a
I'd love to. Thank you, Tom.
Yes, sir.